Miller, and this is a course whose overall theme is finding balance in a world of extremes. And tonight we're dealing with the subject of communication being more than talk, noting that we're working to find a balance between avoidance and abuse in our communication. This theme, by the way, finding balance in a world of extremes, comes out of the observation that we often realize that we do live in a culture that likes to reside much more in the extremes than in some kind of midpoint or moderation or some kind of balance between the two. And of course, people will jump up and down immediately and say, whoa, wrong. I am a very moderate person. I am not into the extremes. And all I can say is, let's take a look at your life and we'll see. It's amazing when we look at these things how sometimes we become aware that we have been living maybe not in the absolute extreme, but very, very close to it, at least far away from some sense of balance. And very often it takes something of a shock, something of an intervention or a catastrophe of some sort to bring us to our senses, and we say, I can't believe, you know, that I was living so far over here in this extreme. What we try to do is to seek for and achieve that wonderful gift that Jesus talked about, the abundant life, when he said, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. The Greek word I said for that is perissos. And perissos means overflowing, superabundance, extra added, like the kind of ice cream scoops we get next door. That's perissos. And teleos, the wholeness, the completeness of life. You need to be teleos as your Father in heaven is teleos. You need to be whole and complete. And I maintain that we find this perissos and this teleos only through a sense of balance, of bringing together these opposites without avoiding either one or the other. People oftentimes do that. We get into going for one extreme or the other. We sometimes arbitrarily decide that one extreme is desirable and the other extreme is undesirable. Like here, I would suppose that more people would say, well, avoidance. You want to be kind of laid back and cool rather than abusive. So that looks real bad. And so we say then, oh, avoid that completely. The point in all of these is that there is always something of value and worth in that which appears to be undesirable. And we always have to be very careful of that which appears to be very, very desirable, because there's probably something in there that's not all that swift. In other words, you always look for the virtue in vice, and you always beware of the vice in virtue. We have a hard one tonight. I need to tell you that a lot of the stuff that I'm doing in this series comes out of this little book that I wrote some years ago called Joy of Feeling Good, which is the only one, incidentally, I think of most of my books that we don't have in the circulating library. I just checked it out again tonight. And we're probably going to be getting some more of these in the bookstore. So if you're interested, this and some of the other ones, take a look at the butcher block in the middle of the store. There are a couple over there that have slight imprints. One of the octavos, one of the little sections, was printed upside down. And people, everything is there, it's just that I think 16 pages are upside down. And people say, oh, I don't want to buy that, that's imperfect. Buy it. It could very well be of value. Like the upside down airplane on the airmail stamp. Seriously though, watch for them. They'll be coming into the bookstore if you're interested at all. You're free to take a glance at this too anytime you want. I said we have a hard subject tonight because communication is not easy. It's usually it takes a lot of effort to do, and in our fast food, fast service society, we don't like to spend any more time than we have to spend. And if I sit here and tell you that communication, authentic, good, valid communication, is going to take some time, you're probably going to say, oh well. Our communication, frankly, is generally very poor. We do not do a good job communicating. We do much more lecturing than we do communicating. We lecture to each other. I lecture to you for a few minutes, and then I pause, and you quick jump in and grab the ball while it's still in the air, and you lecture to me for a while, and then I lecture back to you. We're not very good listeners. We like to lecture, but we hate to listen. because that also requires some work. Half of communication, however, is listening. And if there are no listeners, there is no communication. There may be sound and fury even, but it will, as the bard said, signify nothing if there is no one to hear and to interpret. Consequently, we do move to the extremes very, very readily in this aspect or this dimension of our lives. We avoid communication at the one extreme, or we abuse it, we overindulge it at the other extreme. What we want to do is somehow find a point of balance between these extremes. That's what we strive for in all of these dimensions of the experience of life. Somewhere here, for some of us, maybe over here for some others. Not certainly for the absolute midpoint. There's sort of a mid-path between these extremes in all of these dimensions. And we try to find somewhere within that mid-zone. Over at this end, where the extreme is avoidance, there's just the refusal to become involved in communication. These are people who just kind of walk away. Or people that you begin to try to strike some communication up with them and they just sort of, oh, yeah, and they're off. Or non-listening, those are those of us who don't like to listen at all, we like to lecture, and so we really don't pay any attention at all to what is being said to us. We're waiting to get that second of dead air when we can jump in and begin our lecture. Have you ever been aware of talking with somebody who would do this? I have done it deliberately, just to be a rat. I have said something really off the wall, and I'd say, don't you think so? The person would say, oh yeah, yeah. I'd say, oh, you really do? Oh, wait, what? Try it sometime. It's not a way to make friends and influence people, but this will help you see the non-listening that goes on in our so-called communication. Games playing is an avoidance of honest, open, straightforward communication. When we get on into this a little bit more this evening, I'll tell you something more about that. Silent treatment is a marvelous way to control the communication when in fact there isn't any communication. There is a communication there that is nonverbal, and it works very, very effectively, and it is very efficient because it doesn't require much energy. You kind of just sit there like a stone. And by the way, I forgot to tell you, this is a discuss as we go course. I've forgotten that every time. This is the sixth time now. By discuss as we go, I mean we do our interaction while I'm rambling on. If you've got questions or observations or stories that you want to tell or you want to challenge or criticize, you just put your hand up and we'll deal with it right then and there, rather than saying we're going to have 15 minutes or so at the end of the presentation. So this is a discuss as we go course. Please feel free to interact with me, make your comments as we move along. Don't hesitate at all. Pleading ignorance is another avoidance end of it. I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. Don't bother me with your conversation. I don't want to hear it. I don't know. I didn't know that was what you wanted. I didn't know that was what you didn't want. I don't know. Am I supposed to know everything? I don't know that much.
Sounds good to me.
It works.
It works.
It works. Right. It works. They all work. Yes.
At any time, are we going to have to hold up our hands as groups of where we fall along this?
Only if
we just
want
sit
to.
Quietly.
Only if you want to. Exposure is up to you. But over here, on the abusive side, there is the domination. We find this oftentimes in families, where a parent oftentimes will be dominating the communication in the family. So it becomes unilateral, really. It only goes one way, and communication is only communication when it goes two ways. And so it's an absolute abuse of it. Lecturing. I've already alluded to that. And you messages. You disgust me. You make me sick. You are a slob. You are the most untidy person I've ever seen. You are an absolute ignoramus.
that is a way to communicate, and certainly a way to get your point across, and a way to express your feelings, but also a way to destroy communication because it is so extreme. The balance point, somewhere in between those, is this: straightforward, clear, open, honest sharing, plus active listening and feedback. The reason, yeah.
I have a question about the two sides, the abusive and the avoidance. If you have two people, one that's abusive, one that avoids communication, and this abusive person starts saying something like that, make the other person just turn them off.
Oh, yeah.
And that guy will come on even stronger.
Yeah. Pull in. Oftentimes, these people marry. Oftentimes they marry. We should do something on marriage sometime, because the reasons people marry are 90% sick and 10% healthy. I mean that. You know, people say that they marry for love. We don't marry for love. We marry for fitting our illnesses together somehow. It's true. And the marriages that survive are the people who recognize that and then come to grips with it and deal with it. But oh no, they attract. Somebody who is abusive in communication will find himself or herself somebody who's a real puller back, and they'll just feed, each one will feed off the other's pathology.
But if you give the other guy silent treatment, that'll make you abusive when you work.
That's right. That's why I say they feed off each other.
Well, it's also possible, though, in the same individual, to have avoidance characteristics.
Oh, yeah.
And also to have abusive characteristics.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we would be very, very, very hard-pressed to find anybody who fit totally and completely an extreme, you know, absolute. Oh, yeah.
But what you're saying is that we all tend to have a type.
Like right.
Some may be more avoidance than abusive or
exactly.
Balance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the point of all this is to see, to learn to understand where we do shake out on this continuum. And then if we are of a mind to endeavor to move ourselves closer to some kind of a midpoint where health, where fullness of the experience of life, where wholeness and completeness lies. That's what it's all about.
In regard to this marriage situation, I think that's a bone I'd have to pick with Jesus. I sure wish he'd gotten married, so I think it's
I'm not going to touch that one. not with only 40 minutes to go. Oh, dear. What is communication? Communication, in a sense, is difficult to define. Usually, there is some kind of disequilibrium within a person who is called a sender. I have a need. Everything isn't just smooth and easy. I have a need, like where is the bathroom? Or what time do we eat? Or I have something that I want to share with you. I really like the color of your t-shirt. Or I have something to tell you of importance. Your shoe is on fire and you should put it up. There's some sense of disequilibrium which I have to endeavor to get straightened out, and I communicate what that is. But I do it usually, not always certainly, but usually in the form, in the symbolism of words, language. There's an awful lot of communication that goes on non-verbally, simply by body posture and so forth, and glances. There's a lot of communication that goes on in inflections or pronunciations of words. But essentially, in our culture, we're communicating with the symbolism of words. So we have to encode whatever the stuff is, the message within us that we want to get across. We have to encode that. Then we send it over here. And I say there really has to be a receiver over there to get that message. But that receiver, in order to get it, has to decode it. And it looks like a very, very simple process, but it's actually extremely difficult. Now, in the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to tell you how difficult it is and why we get into things like this and why we get into things like this and this. because they're so much easier. This is not communication. This is only half of it. But this is where most of us stop. In order for there to be full communication, I said it's a two-way street, and it has to come back so that the receiver has to check out or give feedback to, that's why feedback is up there, to the sender, so that they both are on exactly the same wavelength. The sender knows that the receiver has gotten the message, and the receiver knows that he or she has gotten what the message was that the sender sent. But there's still a problem, because when we send it, we send a code which is above the message. Let's say there's a classic illustration of a man and his young son walking down the road, the street, and there's a chain link fence along the sidewalk or the curb there, and all of a sudden they're going by, this German Shepherd comes tearing around the house, just barking his head off, something awful, and comes slamming up against the chain link fence, and the little boy jumps over close to his daddy and says, "Will the doggy bite?" And they pull back and cross the road to get away from this barking monster. And daddy says, "Well, that's a German Shepherd dog, and they're known to be rather nasty, except to their master and mistress, and we aren't either one. And judging from the tone of the bark, the probability is very high that, yeah, the doggy will really bite." Now, has communication taken place? Well, you can say the man certainly did answer his son's question, but was that the real message? What was the real message that was getting across, or that was meant to get across from the little boy to his father? "I'm afraid." And he even physically pulls closer to him. But his father responds to the code rather than to the message. And the two of them come together like this. And I maintain that that's one of the catastrophes, one of the tragedies of our communication. Most of the stuff in code is on the head level. And so we try to sneak messages in underneath that. And those are on more of a feeling level, where it's a little more skittish. We're kind of comfortable and safe dealing up in the head, in factual academic material. But to get down into, "You're kind of frightened by the doggy." "You bet, Daddy, you bet!" It's a little scarier. And I'll give you lots of illustrations as we move through the evening. But the motto of effective, efficient communication is, say what you mean, and for heaven's sakes, mean what you say. Now, had the father said, now this is going to sound clumsy, but nevertheless, this is just the model. You're not really wondering whether the doggy will bite or not. It's pretty obvious that the dog might bite. You're scared, aren't you? And I'm scared too. "Yeah, Daddy, let's get out of here." Communication has taken place then. See, they have connected. Daddy has taken the chance of moving down from the head into the gut, and has said to him, "Yeah, you're scared and I'm scared too. So let's move on pretty quickly." Well, the thing that we run into that disallows effective communication is the cadre of problems, both on the encoding and the decoding. And both sides, both extremes, use these things. There can be, over on the encoding side, there can be hidden messages, there can be double messages, there can be sarcasm, barbed humor, passive-aggressive stuff, and there can be incongruence. And over on the decoding side, there can be assumption, oh, that dear old friend assumption, and there can be selective hearing, and there can be the problem of different codes. So let's take a look now. Anything that you need to check out before we get into looking at
how we can snafu. Yes?
Are you going to go over those items?
I am. Yeah, I am. That was just to tell you what's down the road. Anything at all? Hidden messages are delightful. They are fun. But they are games. That's an avoidance of straightforward, clear, open, honest sharing. Hidden messages, all of these that I brought along are actual quotations. So I didn't have to, you don't have to make these things up. Here are a few. I understand that this is a parent saying to a child, to a youngster, I understand that some of the parties end up without any parents at all around. That's a factual code, okay? The real message is, you kids get into moral misbehavior, don't you, whenever you're not chaperoned, which is a gut kind of thing. How about this one? Kids today have it pretty soft. Message, you don't assume appropriate responsibility. Kid says to the parents, I had a hard time going to sleep last night. It was so loud down here. That's the code. The message is, are you two going to split up? Is that what all the racket was about? Kid says, my English teacher is a throw-up from the Neanderthal age.
That means I'm having trouble with
absolutely. The real message is, I'm flunking English. I am flunking English, Mom, Dad. Marcia told me about, this is a woman telling her husband, Marcia told me about another restaurant we simply must visit. I get so tired of her telling me about all those restaurants they go to. Why don't we go to a nice restaurant once in a while, Mike, huh? Hey, man, huh? People nowadays think they can do anything they want. I get really upset when you do so-and-so or such-and-such without telling me that you're going to do it. In these hidden messages, now, you're smart people, you caught them. The receiver knows full well that there's something more there than what the code said. But you don't know what. You don't know for sure what the message is because it's hidden. It's stashed away underneath. You know that the obvious is not the true message, but you don't know what the true message is. And the way to deal with it, of course, is to say, I'm not sure I know what you are saying. Can you say it in another way? But very, very few people do that. Most of the receivers just, you know, walk right on and get into avoidance because, you know, you don't have to be a 220 IQ to know that there's something more there than meets the eye. But will we take the chance of feedback? Will we take the risk of checking out to complete the communication? You know, if you say to me, people nowadays think they can do anything they want, do I have the courage to say to you, are you upset with me that I'm doing something that I haven't told you that I was going to do?
Well, yes.
It's difficult to communicate back and forth on a feeling level. And consequently, we don't do it. And so we lose an awful lot of the fullness of the experience of life because we're coming together like two ships in the night, sort of passing and maybe blowing our fog horns at each other. We know each other is there, but that's about the extent of it. And we never have the benefits of straightforward, clear, open, honest sharing and active listening and feedback. So we have the problem the potential problem of hidden messages or disguised messages. Then we also have double messages. Double messages are kind of fun because double messages usually rely upon inflection in the voice. Double messages in print you really can't connect well with. But let me tell you what a couple double messages sound like and see if you're not familiar with these two. All right, you can do it if you want to. Boy, that's an agreement statement, right? I said, all right, you can do it if you want to. But is that the real message, or is my real message one of disagreement? I don't want you to do it. You don't know. It's really very nice, George. That's a pleasure statement. You know, you put the words down, print them out, or write them out. It's really very nice, George. Actually, the message is, I think, is disgusting. But we don't say that. And so we have on the one message is pleasure, the other message is displeasure. And the receiver really doesn't know which one it is. How's the receiver going to know? Unless she or he gives feedback, checks it out. I don't want to say, I told you so. That's a matter of acceptance, too. I don't want to say, I told you so. But actually, it's criticism because I told you so. You should have paid attention. Everybody's doing it. That's a nice double message because you get into universalization in the code. The message is actually there are two other people that I know who are doing it, and I should therefore be allowed to do it too, which is very, very individual. It'll work out somehow. A statement of confidence, right? I have to laugh at that myself. But it is. Oh, well, it'll work out somehow. How am I ever going to make it is probably the message underneath of this, see. But people will respond and say, you're absolutely right. You know, things always do have a way of working out, Joe. Yeah. And you go on. There's been no communication because the sender has put out this feeler. We do this. Because we don't innately and instinctively and intuitively trust people, we'll put out feelers. And we'll put them out in double messages or in hidden messages. Like, it'll work out somehow. When actually what I want to say if I trusted you would be to say, I don't know how this is ever going to work out. It's got me scared half to death. But I don't want to do that, see. I don't want to expose myself in my feelings to you. So I send you a code, hoping upon hope that you will pick it up as an active listener. But you just go on and say, well, remember the 23rd Psalm, Joe? Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow. Double messages. The receiver suspects that there is more here than meets the eye, but how much more, we don't know. And so again, it's a matter of feedback or checking out. I'm not sure what you're saying. People do this. They screw up the encoding for essentially the same reasons as the people who send hidden messages. They are afraid of reprisal. They are afraid of offending. They are embarrassed, really, by what the feeling is that is going on inside. And so they mask it, either in a hidden message or a double message. And then we come to the third real snafu in encoding, and this is a delightful one. This is called sarcasm or barbed humor. Actually, it's passive aggression. Passive aggression, you know, is the same as aggression. Instead of stabbing the person right in the chest, you smile at them and then walk away and go around the house and come in the back door and walk up and stab them in the back. That's passive aggression. It's essentially the same thing.
Worse.
Yeah. And we call it barbed humor because a lot of us put our messages in the form of some humorous statement when in fact there's a lot of bile underneath it, a lot of anger and resentment. I have a vulgar phrase which I use, but I won't use it among you. It's called piss and vinegar. Oh, I did use it. I'm sorry. Whoops. A little shadow slipped through there. And it'll come out. Let me read you a few of these. I just know that you graduated at the head of your class. What do you suppose might be the real message under that? Take a guess.
You're a real dummy.
Absolutely. You know, or you are nerd of Nerdsville. I would be absolutely, this was a choir director. I would be absolutely ecstatic if someone, anyone, would ever arrive at rehearsal on time. I think that's a beauty. I mean, just look at the zoom coming in, the zing. You people would just send me out of my gourd in ecstasy if you would come on time. Let's see. Some people think that because they have a degree, they should be worshipped. Most of the time you put a little giggle on this that sort of tends to soften the fire of the sarcasm. Gee, I wish I had lived back in the dark ages so I would be as smart as you. And the retort then by the parent is, this is really a marvelous age to be growing up. You know so much. Kid says, I really think there's a double standard in our house. No money for movies. No, but plenty for booze each week. Don't bother to dress up. Adults have come to expect kids to dress sloppy. The Johnsons are going out west for a 5-day ski trip, she says. He says, we'd be able to go on a vacation too if the household finances were managed better. He says to her, I hope you look good at the party tonight. The boss is going to be there. And she says, of course I'll look smashing at the party. I have a whole closet full of clothes to choose from. Have any of you ever seen the movie version of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the one with Burton and Taylor, when they did it? Absolute classic of how to slash each other to ribbons while smiling beatifically at each other. Some people really do develop an art of the zing, the zinger. The wild toss. I had a couple one time, I need to share this with you because it's the most elaborate I've ever come across. The man was what we call a passive-aggressive male, and the woman was what we call a hostile-dependent female. And they were, again, you know, we're talking about the marriage thing. These were two people that just hooked right into each other. His name was Bill, her name was Mary. And when they would go to a party, and inevitably they would do this, Bill would say to the folks, I'd like you to meet my wife, Mary, whom I affectionately refer to as the old gray mare. Whereupon Mary would say, yes, and this is my husband, Bill, who is an absolute stitch in between his fits of depression. Now, how would you feel if you were there in the little audience that where these two were introducing themselves? Wouldn't you just kind of go, I gotta get away from here. This is not safe territory. Mind you now, these are not exaggerations. There's no need to exaggerate. Maybe we don't do them as blatantly, but we get into these games very, very readily. We get into this passive-aggressive sarcasm. And I say it's got the humor to it. We kind of make a little joke out of it. And it takes an awful lot of courage to wear fuchsia socks, doesn't it? Yes, indeed. Yeah. So It's easy to do, I tell you. It's easy to do. Only an illustration.
Do you want my feedback?
Oh, go. Come on. What's the fourth one? We really have to move along here. The fourth one is in con... Oh, I'm sorry.
You told us how you can give feedback.
Yeah.
What do you do with sarcasm?
Would you, when you make a remark about my hose, would you be a little more specific? It sounds to me like there's something else going other than that there's courage involved in wearing stockings like this. I mean, that takes courage. It really does. And most of the time, the people who are victims of sarcasm and barbed humor just kind of laugh it off. And then back in the men's room, the ladies' room, or in the parking lot or somewhere, they say, "Did you hear what that said?" And they never do it straightforward, clear, open, honest, up front. They just don't do that. But if we had the courage to do that, to say, you know, it sounds like there's something more in your little joke. Wonder what it is. You want to send that message a little more clearly? Oh, I didn't mean any harm. I was just, ha, 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 ha. Okay. I don't know what to do with that then, because obviously the sender has a problem. God only knows what the problem is, unless you want to get into psychoanalysis on the parking lot or in the ladies' room, you know. It doesn't work. But that's what you do. Give the feedback as directly and clearly as you can. The incongruence is where you don't, things don't jive. The situation doesn't match the words, or the words don't match the appearance, or the appearance doesn't match the mood. That's smiling when you're angry. People are consistently doing that. Covering over the uncomfortableness of an angry feeling with a smile, or laughing. And there's kind of an anxious laughter that goes with anxiety. Oftentimes we refer to it as an anxious laugh. So laughing whenever you're frightened, keeping stoic, keeping a stiff upper lip whenever you are sad or hurting. They just come together like this. Yes, everything is going to turn out. I know. You know, that's a good incongruence. I'm not mad. That's obvious incongruence. Or some person who has deep furrows in the brow and has a downcast countenance that says, "No, I'm not at all upset that I didn't get invited to the dance." Oh. Yeah. Now you say those are pretty blatant examples. Not really. You know, we do those incongruous things. And then again, of course, the receiver knows that there's something much more there than meets the eye. And if you don't check it out or don't give feedback, the communication will never take place. It'll just be coming together like this. So there are all kinds of problems over on the encoding end, but we slip over now to the decoding end and see what we run into there. What can go wrong on the decoding end? Well, the first one I said was that big old favorite called assumption. And I don't really know what you meant by what you just said. However, I think I know. I think I have a pretty good idea. So why bother to spend the time checking it out? I'll just go on my way, assuming that you did in fact mean what you said, and that will be that. Assumption is a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake. To assume anything is catastrophic, really, without checking it out. Instead of asking you, I will guess. And I will usually guess in the way that will be least threatening to me and most enhancing of the relationship. So that if you say something to me in one of these messed up encodings that for a moment I think, uh-oh, I'll quickly assume that you meant something else simply because your message wasn't straightforward. Your code was clouded. And we do that. That's the biggest flaw in communication. Assuming that you said something that maybe you said or didn't say. I don't know. But failure to check out, to see if what you heard is actually what the sender meant, will contaminate communication faster than anything else that I know. But we do it. I mean, I can sit here and say that, but it is so hard. It's so very, very hard. Here in communication is a dimension that goes on in courtship so much. It's called mutual seduction, or what do you call it when people get in cahoots? Conspiracy, mutual conspiracy. Because I will present and want to present only what I want her to see. And she will see and hear only what she wants to hear and see. If, in fact, I should present something that I wouldn't want to present and she picks it up, she doesn't really want to see it, and so she'll say, oh, I didn't see that. And the same thing is vice versa. She will want to present only her very finest and only her very best to me. People do not like in intimate relationships to lead with their hind ends, obviously. You know, we put our best foot forward. And if I happen to see something not all that swift, which she really didn't want me to see, she will pretend that she didn't expose that, and I'll say, oh, I didn't see it anyway, so don't worry. There's this mutual conspiracy that goes on in communication. When the sender says something that the receiver isn't sure is all that complimentary, the receiver will assume that the sender really didn't mean that and really meant to be complimentary. That moves us into the second problem in decoding, and that is using selective hearing and interpretation. In other words, hearing only what you want to hear and interpreting only in ways that will be satisfactory to you. And it doesn't mean that it necessarily has to be all peaches and cream. I mean, there are a lot of people of really poor, wobbly self-image who will hear only negative stuff. No matter how it's said, we've got lots of data to support this, these observations. That if we bring forward a person who has a pretty substantial self-image and high self-esteem, and I tell that person 10 statements, 9 of which are very critical and 1 which is laudatory, and then we get together the next day and I say, now I told you 10 things yesterday. What do you remember of the 10 I said? The first thing that the good self-image person will tell me is the one positive, congratulatory statement that I made, and we'll have a hard time remembering the other 9. Vice versa. Person of poor, wobbly self-image, you tell them 9 very positive things about themselves, 1 critical thing. Next day, what did I tell you? Well, you said I was a real schlemiel. Now remember the negative thing, and they'll have a hard time pulling even 3 of the positives back in. So we do practice selective hearing. We will avoid hearing that which is frightening. We will avoid hearing that which is critical. We will avoid, oftentimes, hearing that which demands responsibility. Well, you didn't say, you just said, show up for dinner at 5 o'clock. You didn't really say where. But you knew that we always meet at so-and-so. Why weren't you there? Well, you didn't say there. And so we've got lousy sending in the encoding and lousy decoding on the receiver's end. So they come together like this. And then they get at each other's throats because it was your fault. You didn't send a clear message. Like the Dickens, it was my fault. It was your fault. I sent the message. You didn't. So dumb, you didn't even understand how to interpret it. Or on the positive side, hearing only that which is flattering, hearing only that which removes responsibility, and hearing only that which rewards. And not hearing anything of the rest of the stuff. Or interpretation, that's simply interpreting what the other person is saying, what the sender is saying, to fit your particular position, to agree with your position, to agree with your image of yourself. And some of these are funny. If they weren't so tragic, they would really be funny. When we come to different codes, define for me in this sentence the word early. Okay, that's not too hard. The sentence is, try to be home early. define too much in this sentence. You eat too much. Define the word better. Well, everybody knows it's good, better, best. Oh, well. Define better in this sentence. Try to do better. W-A-S-T-E, waste. What does waste mean in this sentence? Don't waste money. Late. Don't come in late. Rainy day. And save in this sentence. Save. We must save for a rainy day. What does that mean? Here's another one. The word handle, you know, handle, and wisely. Handle your money wisely. Those are profound statements, aren't they? Save for a rainy day, handle your money wisely. What do they mean? Everybody knows what these words mean, sure, but nobody knows what they mean. I tell you, if you sit down, and if you do any marriage counseling, you know what it's like to sit down with a couple who are into these different codes. I tell that man just as clear as the nose on his face, dot, 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 dot. And he responds as if I said, dit, 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 dit. Come together like this. Well, one of the finest things to bring us to some sense of balance between these extremes is the use of what we've come to call the I message. I talked a little bit about this last week. And I can't remember where, in which of the tracks it was. But certainly in communication, the I message is the classic. And the, oh, I know what it was, when we were talking about feelings. Yeah. Because within the I message, we give a very clear encoding of the feeling that I'm feeling because of what you have done or said or didn't do or didn't say and how it affects me. Like I say, instead of the choir director saying, you know, I would be absolutely ecstatic if anybody ever showed up on time, the choir director could say, I am very, very upset whenever you people come in late because it throws the whole schedule into arrears. I feel because of what you do, because of how it concretely, mind you, how it concretely affects me. A you message, which the abuser uses, is, you are just a stupid broad. When in fact, the I message would be, I get very upset with you when you neglect to enter the amount of checks on the stubs. Because when the end of the month comes, then I have to do a Chinese fire drill of some sort to try to balance the checking account. See, the you message that I just blasted out at you a minute ago, and that I also blasted out at you at the beginning. You make me sick. You are disgusting. You are a slob. Destroys communication. But that's the easy thing for the abuser. And that's the easy thing really for most of us, really, to say, you know, if only you were a better person, life would be wonderful. No. I know this sounds kind of gimmicky, maybe it is gimmicky. Maybe it sounds artificial. I got to remember this now. Miller said, "You say, I feel so and so when you do so and so because of how it affects me." But in very short time, when you get in the hang of doing it, you will discover what a real facilitator of communication it is. It puts the ball in the other person's court in a tender way, and you do it with congruence. I mean, you don't say, Joey, I really get angry with you whenever you do so-and-so. No. You let the magnitude of the feeling come forward, whatever it is. Let's get off of anger and get on to positive love. I get really turned on whenever you look at me the way you just looked at me, because it says to me, you really love me. Oh, who talks like that? Yeah. Why don't we talk like that? Why don't we communicate that way? Why don't we say what we mean and mean what we say? Why don't we behave in straightforward, clear, open, honest, sharing actions with each other? Well, probably because of the trust level, probably because of the fear of not wanting to risk being attacked or being degraded or being made fun of or getting into a spat. We tend to want to avoid conflict because conflict is something, and a couple of people told me after we were talking about feelings and the expression of anger, conflict is something that is very uncomfortable, and so they'll do most anything to avoid it and get into game playing. Conflict is a neutral kind of thing. I had no intention of saying this, but I think it's important. It just comes into my head to say to you that conflict is a neutral thing. That two people can be actually much closer after conflict resolution than they were before it. But some people say, the only way I've ever seen conflict was where somebody got hurt, and therefore I'm going to avoid it. Those people are really unfortunate because they won't risk taking the chance of sending I messages. Well, so much for finding a balance between avoidance and abuse. What questions might you have? We've got about 4 or 5 minutes. Yes, sir.
One of the problems, this is a learned behavior from your
environment,
probably.
Yeah.
You have to break this cycle somewhere in order to pass down a better model.
And it's hard. And it's very difficult. Now, make no bones about that. It's not a picnic in the park on a Sunday afternoon. Uh-uh. But not to be discouraged. Not to be discouraged, because I find a lot of people realizing after the fact, you know, they say, I want to do this, and so they have a mindset to do that. Because of the old behavioral patterns, under stress, they regress and go back to the old pattern. But maybe 5-10 minutes after, they say, I did it again. It's not too late. So you can go back and restructure the communication again. Even if it's the next day. It doesn't really matter. Well, it matters, yeah, but I mean, all is not lost. So yeah, we look at this recognizing that it's tough work. I said at the beginning, communication itself is tough work. Breaking old communication patterns and old messages that keep playing over in our heads is harder yet, but we can do it. We can do it. Yes?
If you find yourself in a relationship where you are miscommunicating that way, you know, just about all your conversations aren't hitting each other. If you realize that and start concentrating on better techniques of communicating, will that help the situation, or will the other person need to do that as well? Mm-hmm.
What you do is you sit down with the other person and you say, hey, let's try something new. In my observation, we're coming together like this a lot of time in our communication. I don't know whether you perceive it that way or not. Well, I know, wait a minute. Let's make a deal. Will you agree to let me tell you my spiel without interrupting? All right. Because, you know, I'm talking about the lecturing. I'm trying to be very realistic. I would like to go to work on our communication, and I'd like to make a deal with you. I'm going to tell you some of the things that I know about miscommunication. Whether you agree with them or not, well, you know, we can talk about that after I finish my spiel. But I'd like to make a deal with you that we will blow the whistle on each other without getting into a heated argument about it. We'll blow the whistle any time either you or I pick up one of these snafus in communication. And will not consider the blowing of the whistle an attack. Now that's important. Don't forget that part of it. We're not going to consider this an attack. We're going to consider this an opportunity for us to look at what's going on. To see if right at that moment we can find a better way to communicate. And it's not going to happen immediately. But again, if you're 5 minutes into going back and forth like this, you can say, oh, whoa, blow the whistle. For the last 5 minutes, we've been... And it works. It really does. Yes?
I've got a friend who's teaching at a kindergarten in California, and they're teaching this I messages to these little kids, and this little four-year-old says to his friend when he pushed him, I don't like it when you push me. I don't feel good when you
Hey, do how about that?
Bravo.
How about that?
They're going to learn.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Encouraging.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the I message is that the third part is crucial, how it concretely affects you. Because I had a thing when Eric, our younger son, was younger, when he mowed the lawn, he mowed it on a bias, 45-degree angle with the road. And I looked at that and I thought, that isn't the way you do it. And I say, Eric, when you mow the lawn, mow it parallel to the road. So he goes off. You know, next time he mows it, 45-degree angle. And I said, this happened more than once. And finally I said to him, Eric, I get just furious with you whenever you mow the lawn on a 45-degree angle because... And I couldn't find how it concretely affected me, see? And he looked at me and he says, the grass gets cut, doesn't it? I said, yes. The grass is cut. And in a day or two, you don't even see the marks any longer, okay? Yeah. And so you see, if you do, when you practice the I message and you can't come up with how this behavior concretely affects you, in all probability, you got the problem. See, the problem was mine. The problem was that Bill wanted it done the way Bill does it. After all, everybody knows that's the only right way to do it, right? Of course. And so the I message helped me to realize that no, that's not the issue. The issue is with you and your control and your wanting to have things your way and so on. And he was absolutely right. You know, I couldn't quarrel with him. Yes?
Julie talked about somebody you had a relationship with. What about someone who you may work with who leans towards the abusive side and is not a close friend, but causes a lot of conflict with the people around? How do you tactfully steer them towards the middle a little bit?
I'm just a firm believer in giving feedback, both positive and critical. And giving feedback is really, what's the word I want? When you do something, a favor. Is really doing a favor for a person because, and this is not rationalization, if you don't care about the person, you just walk past and say, what a meathead. And so to give critical feedback truly is to do the person a favor if you have a sense of love behind it. It's the same thing in an intervention with a chemical dependency or any kind of addiction situation. If you go into an intervention with, we're going to get you, boy or girl, it's not going to work. But if you go into that kind of a setting, caring about the addicted person, loving the addicted person enough to be able to say, we want to intervene because we don't want to see you kill yourself. That's important. And somehow that gets through. To sit down with a person and say, I want to tell you some things that may be a little difficult for me to say and maybe difficult for you to hear. But I care enough about you to share them with you. And I hope that we can have a mutual, open, honest interchange and sharing. And then go on and say, has it ever occurred to you that in some interchanges, some people tend to perceive you as whatever, either overbearing or very narrow in your opinion and not open to others, or whatever the issues are, you know, which you alone would know. It takes guts. There's no question about it, you know. And it's easy for me to sit here and say it, but in the actual situation, you know, you get kind of a little bit of a palpitation, and your hands get a little sweaty, and your armpits get wet, and that happens. That's reality.
This might be a place where
we got to quit.
Okay. Put somebody else in the chair, take both sides of the chair.
Yeah, a little gestalt would help, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thank you for your attendance. I apologize for keeping you a little over time. Tomorrow, what do we do tomorrow? I don't know what we do tomorrow. Faith. Tomorrow is faith. That's right.
What is it?
Faith. The extremes are, yeah, absolute